Numbers chapter 12. In the previous chapter of Numbers, we read about the 10th and 11th sins. There are 21 total, we remember, from the time of the Exodus to the time they enter into the land of Canaan. The exceeding sinfulness of sin, that number. Brother G.E. Jones taught that. I really never have forgotten it. Numbers have a way of sticking in my mind. If you put a number to it, it seemed like the Lord just lets me latch on to it. In this chapter, chapter 11, they came into the sin of complaining that they had to make the sojourn and lusting after the things in Egypt. This comes up in the message of Stephen, and he says this of them: they turn in their hearts back again to Egypt. Now, in this 12th chapter is the 12th sin. This one involves Moses' sister and brother, Miriam and Aaron. The children of Israel, as you saw in the last verse, chapter 11, sojourn to Hazeroth and have encamped here or pitched their tents. Israel is encamped in their appointed place around the tabernacle. All of this has been set up, as we read, to this place in Numbers. Afar off is the camp of Judah on the east, camp of Reuben on the south, camp of Ephraim on the west, and Dan on the north. They're far off. And near to the tabernacle are the families of Levi. Moses, Aaron, and his two remaining sons, you remember two died, but Eleazar and Ithamar, and their families. To the south is the family of Kohath. To the west, the family of Gershon. To the north, Merari. They're in the midst of the camp so that all of Israel can see is the cloud and fiery pillar. It has descended now that they're encamped. It has descended upon and is resting over the place called the holiest of all, where the tabernacle is. In the back is that place where the Ark of the Covenant, which has the lid called the mercy seat on it. So we have that kind of an image. I like to keep that in my mind as they move forward. That's something that always should be there. So as we read in verse 1, and Miriam and Aaron spake against Moses because, or concerning, the Ethiopian woman whom he had married. The verb is actually had taken, and it understands had taken, to wife. For he had married an Ethiopian woman. First, so that everyone knows, Miriam and Aaron are Moses' older brother and sister. They were born to Amram and Jochebed in Exodus chapter 6, verse 20. Amram took him, Jochebed, his father's sister to wife, and she bare him Aaron and Moses, and the years of the life of Amram were 137 years. Then scripture tells us that we can derive these things, that Miriam is the oldest. Aaron is the second oldest by 3 years to Moses, and Moses, of course, the youngest. In Exodus chapter 2, verse 7, then said his, referring to three-month-old Moses, then said his sister Miriam to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go to call thee a nurse of the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for thee?" Now, I actually don't know how much older Miriam is, but she's the oldest child. Exodus 7:7 Moses was four score years old. How many is that? It's 80 at this time. And Aaron was 83. So 3 year difference. Miriam first, Aaron, and then Moses. So second, notice that in this text, they're given in that order. Miriam is first, and then Aaron. While it might be true that this is because she was the oldest of the three, the judgment she receives that we're going to read about from the Lord in the following account suggests she led in this event to contradict Moses' leadership. Third, consider that the woman which Moses took for a wife, she was called an Ethiopian. This Ethiopian is an adjective, translates from the Hebrew Cush. Cush. Cush was the son of Ham, and Ham was the son of Noah. The best I could tell, the Cushites, or Ethiopians, if I might include that just all together, appear to have settled a vast area from Babylon, say mid-Arabia, and southern Arabia, and over to the northeast region of Egypt. Now, we don't know when Moses took this Ethiopian woman to be his wife, except that it was at some point in the past. We don't know her name, but we do know that she was not an Israelite. You might recall in chapter 11, verse 4, there was mention of a mixed multitude. At this point in time, we want to remind you that the Lord had not begun to regulate mixed marriages. In Exodus chapter 34, verses 12 through 16, you will find there a warning to Israel when once they have possessed the land of Canaan against the dangers of mixed marriages, that is, marrying with those that had formerly possessed the land. Until now, the only wife of Moses that we're aware of was named Zipporah. Zipporah is never called an Ethiopian. She is a Midianite, living in the same area of the Cushites, but she is a Midianite. Moses, by this time, I'm bringing this up because just so we give some thought, had been married to Zipporah for almost 40 years. It is thought by some that she had since died. In Exodus chapter 18, verses 1 through 3, is the last mention of Zipporah. The truth is, we simply do not know if Zipporah was alive or dead at this time. But it is difficult to imagine, at least for me, that Miriam and Aaron are objecting only now to a marriage that had occurred so long ago. Either Moses remarried after the death of Zipporah, or he added another wife. Neither of which has any effect on this present account. The main point is that Miriam and Aaron sin against the Lord by speaking against their brother, Moses. The relationship they had as siblings didn't alter the fact that God had appointed Moses over them to be their leader. So verse 2, and they said, hath the Lord indeed spoken only by Moses? Hath he not? Now they both said this. Hath he not spoken also by us? Miriam and Aaron. And the Lord heard it. He heard their complaint. Miriam and Aaron thought that because the Lord had also used them to speak His word, that they possessed the same right or authority as their brother Moses. That's what they thought. The truth is, the Lord did speak through Miriam. She is called a prophetess in Exodus 15, verse 20. And Miriam, the prophetess, the sister of Aaron, took a timbrel in her hand, and all the women went out after her with timbrels and with dances. When the Lord had delivered Egypt, he'd come across the Dead Sea. The Lord also spoke through Aaron. Well, Aaron was Moses' spokesperson, and he is called a prophet. In Exodus 4, verses 15 and 16, referring to Moses here, and thou, Moses, shalt speak unto him, Aaron, and put words in his mouth, and I will be with thy mouth, and with his mouth, and I will teach you what ye shall do, you both. And he shall be your spokesman unto the people, and he shall be, even he shall be to thee instead of a mouth. You remember, he complained when the Lord first called him. Moses, I can't speak, I'm not eloquent. I'm slow of speech, a tongue. And it says, and thou shalt be to him instead of God, referring Moses to Aaron. In the place of God, Moses would be to Aaron. In Exodus chapter 7, verse 1, the Lord said to Moses, see, I've made thee a god to Pharaoh, and Aaron thy brother shall be thy prophet. So it's true that the Lord has spoken through both Miriam and Aaron. And the Lord had made all three of them great people of renown in the nation of Israel. And Micah, the prophet Micah, chapter 6, verse 4, I brought thee up out of the land of Egypt and redeemed thee out of the house of servants. And I sent before thee Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. Notable people in Israel. But what's the problem? The Lord subjected them both, Miriam and Aaron, to the office and authority of Moses. Though they possessed these gifts, their function was not the same as their brothers. A sparrow is under the same care as an angel, but their character and the purpose of their lives are very different. A geologist knows the difference between granite and sandstone. So may any schoolboy, but that does not make him a geologist. There was a difference between Moses, Miriam, and Aaron. And they failed to see that difference. The Lord called Moses to lead Israel forth, not Aaron and Miriam, to the land of Canaan. Now, verse 3 says this, and I want you to notice this in parentheses. You could use a big word, big term, parenthetical statement. It's a non-essential. It doesn't mean it's not important, but it does something. It gives us a fact. Moses is the narrator of this account, but it's put there by Moses. And by, in parentheses, he's even given less emphasis to it. So it really gives force to the statement. Now, the man Moses was very meek above all men that were upon the face of the earth, as if he didn't even want to write those words. The character of it just comes, his character comes out in the writing of this. What was Moses' response? There wasn't one. You don't read one in the account. You won't find one. Why? Because he was very meek above all men, all the men which were on the face of the earth. No response. He didn't defend himself. And he probably thought, as meek, humble folks do, he probably thought they were right. But the important thing is that he didn't step aside from what the Lord had called him to do. The truth is, he was faithful to that which the Lord had called him to do. Just a little rabbit. If we are persuaded the Lord would have us to do what we do, we need to do it. In spite of the critics, you're always going to have someone criticize you when you do the right thing. Always. You can't let criticism stop you from doing what you ought to do. If you do, you're not going to do anything. You're just going to have to knuckle under and submit ourselves. We're going to have to submit ourselves to the Lord. He's called me. He would have me to do this in spite of whatever anyone else says. And that's what he did. He was faithful in spite of the criticism and the opposition, even from his family, brother and sister. That comes down pretty hard sometimes in Christian families. Brothers and sisters that know the Lord, sometimes they really get out of sorts with one another. They forget that they're each servants of the Lord. It's too bad because Christian families, those that the Lord has saved, brothers and sisters, they fall out sometimes and they don't speak to each other for years and years and years, 15, 20 years or never, and come into the presence of the Lord. It's just a sad thing. Verse 4, the Lord spake suddenly unto Moses and to Aaron and to Miriam. Notice the change in the order of the names. According to order or authority or headship, the government, Moses, leader of the nation, Aaron, his spokesperson, Miriam takes her place. Change in the order of the names indicates different functions. They came out then. The Lord commanded, come out ye three to the tabernacle of the congregation. And they three came out. They probably came. I'm not exactly sure, but by the time we get to about the 11th verse, I think it solidifies. I think they came to the gate, to the court wherein is the tabernacle. They came to the gate, which was, I believe it was about, I think I've got it here, 30 feet wide. And what is the gate? It's a hanging of beautiful curtains, and they could come inside, but there was the access into the courtyard. I don't know if they entered there yet. It seems to me they're at the gate and drawn there to that place, and where there's a large open area, about 50 by 100 cubits, 75 feet by 150 feet. There in there was the tabernacle in the distance. Before they got to the tabernacle, you'd have the brazen altar and the brazen laver. So there's the setup. So I think they came to this place. They came out, and the Lord came down. He said, well, I thought he was already down. There's something different here. The Lord came down in the pillar of the cloud and stood in the door of the tabernacle and called Aaron and Miriam, and they both came forth. I think they may have come forth to now the door where the Lord had come down. Israel is encamped at Hazeroth, so we understand that the cloudy pillar is resting there, remember, over the mercy seat. But to say that the Lord came down seems to indicate more, that the cloud may have moved forward to the front of the door there of the tabernacle. And again, it's not a door as we think of it. It's a hanging curtain, which would have led into the sanctuary, the first room in the tabernacle. But they knew he was there. Whatever form it was, we don't know, but he did come to the door. And the Lord said in verse 6, "Hear now my words. If there be a prophet among you, I, the Lord, Jehovah, will make myself known unto him in a vision, and will speak unto him in a dream, through mediate means. My servant Moses is not so, who is faithful in all mine house. With him will I speak mouth to mouth, even apparently, not in dark speeches," or otherwise translated proverbs. "And the similitude," that is the image of the Lord, "shall he behold." In comparison to others, Moses enjoyed unmediated conversation with the Lord. The communication was immediate, direct, plain, and clear, not through interpretations, visions, dreams, riddles, dark sayings, or hard sayings and parables. He was clear. So the Lord says, "Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses?" The prophets, you remember, you search the scriptures, you'll see this. The prophets, you know, compared to what Moses had from the Lord in communication, the prophets, though they prophesied, if they were granted an understanding at all, sometimes had to dig and search out the meaning that of that which the Lord had revealed to them. Notice this in 1 Peter chapter 1, beginning at verse 10. This is not what the Lord did with Moses. He gave him direct revelation. Spoke mouth to mouth, as it were, and plainly, clearly. It was understandable. But with the prophets and so forth, in 1 Peter 1 verse 10, "Of which salvation the prophets have inquired and searched diligently, who prophesied of the grace that ye come unto you, searching what or what manner of time the Spirit of Christ which was in them did signify, when it testified beforehand of the sufferings of Christ and the glory that should follow, unto whom it was revealed. This much anyway, that not unto themselves, but unto us they did minister the things that they wrote were for someone else, which are now reported unto you by them that have preached the gospel unto you, with the Holy Ghost sent down from heaven, which things the angels desire to look into. Daniel prophesied, and he didn't understand some of the things he wrote." It says in Daniel 12:9, he said, "Go thy way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end." But Moses, it wasn't like that for him. The Lord revealed himself and honored Moses with a direct revelation of his will. He understood. In Exodus 33:11, the Lord spake to Moses face to face, as a man speaks unto his friend. In Deuteronomy 5:4, the Lord talked with you face to face in the mount of the mist, out of the midst of the fire. I stood between, Moses says, I stood between the Lord and you at that time. He spoke to you face to face through me, to show you the word of the Lord, he says. And again in Deuteronomy 34, verses 10 through 12, "And there arose not a prophet since in Israel like unto Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face," at the clarity. And he goes on. This relationship which the Lord conferred on Moses should have caused Miriam and Aaron to restrain their tongues from speaking this against him. It didn't mean by that that they should have placed an inordinate confidence in their brother, but it did mean that they should have honored and feared him for the office that he held before the Lord. I can't help but I'm amazed at the power that the tongue wields. And every Christian should strive to use it to honor the Lord. This is something that I think we must be diligent to pray about. In Proverbs, how we use our tongue. In Proverbs 16, verse 23, the heart of the wise, if we're wise, if we have the wisdom of Christ, will guide our tongue so that it speaks words that are right and helpful, edifying, useful. The heart of the wise teaches his mouth and adds learning to his lips. A great concern we have about our lips. Words that come from our lips reveal the present state of our hearts. A man that directs his speech for good is like a city that is fortified with walls. In Proverbs 25, verse 28, he that has no rule over his own spirit is like a city that is without that is broken down and without walls. Paul in Ephesians 4, verse 31, says, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you. And he goes on. Again, Paul in Colossians 4, 6, let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, having a savory speech, that you may know how you ought to answer every man. I'm telling you, this really, really should be a daily concern. Of ours. Titus 2, 7 and 8. So be it for the preacher, but I think every brother and sister of Christ would do good to think of this. And in all things, showing thyself a pattern of good works, in doctrine showing uncorruptness, gravity, sincerity, sound speech, that cannot be condemned, that he that is of the contrary part may be ashamed, having no evil thing to say of you, implies that they did and are ashamed for having done so. And so Miriam and Aaron have come past the gate and now to the door of the tabernacle, and the anger of the Lord was kindled. It glowed against them. And he departed. We've said this a number of times, and I do it because it's good. When a child of God does what he should not, he grieves the Spirit of God in him. Paul said, grieve not the Holy Spirit of God, whereby you're sealed unto the day of redemption. And it was in the context of things that we shouldn't do. On the other hand, when he does not do what he ought, he quenches the Spirit. In 1 Thessalonians 4:19, quench not the Spirit. And that, for the most part, is in the midst of things that we should be doing. And so in verse 10, the cloud, his anger glowed against them. He departed, and the cloud departed from off the tabernacle. I think that means he left the door and went back to his place. Israel's not moving, so it's resting over the mercy seat. So he went back there to his place. And behold, Miriam was leprous. It's a verb in the Hebrew, white as snow. And Aaron looked upon Miriam, and behold, she was leprous. In that instant, the Lord struck Miriam with leprosy, and Aaron saw it. It's in the Hebrew, the verb is the pu'al verb, meaning it's intensive passive. In other words, the disease was busily or actively consuming her skin. There are three instances where the Lord smote some, the only I can find, with leprosy and judgment. Miriam, Gehazi, and Azariah. All of them are in that verb form, intensive, passive verb. They were being worked upon by this disease, being consumed alive by it. It's interesting. I think the judgment of God here is commensurate to the sin. Leprosy is like unchecked sin. The potential is that it will spread through us, but throughout the camp, if it's not immediately discerned, diagnosed, and contained. For that reason, anyone thought to be leprous, we studied in the book of Leviticus, was put outside of the camp for as long as that disease remained in his flesh. In our text, the Lord immediately checked the sin of Miriam and Aaron to cut off the infectious nature of what? I think part of this is jealousy and sedition, a rebellion that would begin with them if it weren't checked and infect the entire congregation. I know leprosy is not the only infectious disease, but it is probably the most dreaded of diseases. These two jeopardized not only their lives, their brother's life, but the well-being of the nation by their sin. And that's why I said earlier, I've just made a passing mention about how great the tongue, how it works so powerfully. In James 3:5, he says, even so the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. Behold, he says, how great a matter a little fire kindleth. I loved playing with fire when I was a little boy. And on a couple of occasions, I set a couple of big fires. I mean, I wasn't 6 years old, seven. I know I wasn't eight. Right in there. And I did some serious damage to the church parsonage where my dad was pastoring, I think, his first church. And buddy, he gave me the whooping I'd never forget. My intention was to play with fire, but the result was much bigger. I only meant to play with it, but see what it did. Unchecked, fire gets out of hand quickly. Sin is just like that. It might not have been Miriam and Aaron's intention to harm their brother Moses, but had the Lord not swiftly intervened, the sin would have gotten out of hand, humanly speaking, and much harm would have resulted from it. this sin could, this judgment, I'm sorry, could serve to turn them away from such acts in the future. How many times do we read of unchecked sin, of the need to check it in the nation of Israel? Unchecked sin in the life of a Christian corrupts the whole person, and unchecked in the body corrupts the whole body, the church. We know that in 1 Corinthians 5, it's like leaven left. It leavens the whole lump. What do? You have to cut off that part and separate it. A little leaven leavens the whole lump. And Aaron said to Moses, "Alas, my Lord." This is the second time that I know of where Aaron had called Moses Lord, Adon. We would normally hear Adonai, meaning my Lord. I just leave the the pronoun off the end. Adon. It's the second time. The number two is a matter of being a settled fact. I think now Aaron has got the message that Moses has a high office to him. It's a matter of fact with him now. It's fixed. It's established. The correction has driven it home from the Lord. Aaron's attitude was corrected to honor his younger brother for his office. He says, going on as Aaron speaks to Moses, "I beseech thee, lay not this sin upon us, wherein we have done foolishly, and wherein we have sinned. Let her not be as one dead." That's the ugliness, the dread about this disease. "Let her not be as one dead, of whom the flesh is half consumed when he comes out of his mother's womb. Let her not, in the Septuagint, be as it were like death, as an abortion coming out of his mother's womb, when the disease devours the half of the flesh." Leprosy is described in terms of that body which the womb aborts because it has died and corrupted. It's dreadful. And that's what she was like. And Moses cried unto the Lord, saying, "Heal her now, O God, I beseech thee." And the Lord said to Moses, "If her father had but spit in her face, should she not be ashamed 7 days? Let her be shut out from the camp 7 days, and after that, let her be received in again." Obviously, spitting in someone's face was a shame, but especially so when it was by a father. As I understand it, the point here is that Miriam would bear the shame of her words against Moses for 7 days. So what? Miriam was shut out from the camp 7 days. Sin breaks fellowship and separates between the Lord and between brethren. And we must separate from sin, or we must be separated from. So she was shut out for 7 days, and the people journeyed not till Miriam was brought in again. The whole camp of Israel knew the sin of Moses, sister and brother. In this way, the Lord showed the seriousness of sin and the consequences for it. Incidentally, it was like a shot over the bow to the entire nation. Be warned. If she, then so we. Sin affects others. Reason was speaking, Miriam and Aaron's sin was a setback to the sojourn of the nation. They couldn't travel until she could be brought back in. It's a setback to them. So was also later, as we'll read soon, of Achan's sin. I noticed that in Achan's sin, lives were destroyed. We have to be thoughtful about what we're doing. It takes just one fly to spoil the precious ointment. It might not be my intent, but my sin can impact others in this church. It might be a setback to our sojourn. I could be a contributing factor. A contributing factor. We can never go, it's your fault that I'm not. But I could contribute to someone's unbelief and apostasy. Paul says in Philippians chapter 2, verse 12, "Wherefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation. Demonstrate it with fear and trembling." This is a good example. It's there for our learning. So what? And after the people removed from Hazeroth, afterward they did that and pitched in the wilderness of Paran. Final application. Miriam now restored to the camp, and a great congregation of Israel continued to sojourn to the land of Canaan. The Lord in his faithfulness has chastened the children of Israel for their sins. This is the 12th instance. Why did he chasten them? He chastened them for their good. He chastened them because he loved the nation of Israel. And he loved some of those that were truly his children, that were a part of it. In Hebrews 12, 6, "For whom the Lord loves, he chastens and scourges." That is, he whips every son whom he receives. He chastens them so that they might learn to be subject to his will and be obedient. In Deuteronomy 21, 18, "If a man have a stubborn or rebellious son which will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and that when they have chastened him." What was the purpose for their chastening? So that he would obey. So that he would learn to obey his parents and would not hearken. They were to do something. They would bring him to the elders and they would judge him. And it's like that for us. We know in 1 Corinthians 11, 32, when we are judged, we're chastened of the Lord, that we should not be condemned with the world. What does that mean? So that we might be obedient to the will of God. Again in Hebrews 12, verse 9 through 11, "Furthermore, we've had fathers of our flesh which corrected us, and we gave them reverence. Shall we not much rather be in subjection?" That's the same word that's translated sometimes as obeying, obedient. "Shall we not much rather be in subjection unto the Father of spirits and live? For they verily for a few days chastened us after their own pleasure. But he for our profit, that we might be partakers of his holiness." Now, no chastening for the present seems to be joyous, but grievous it does. I don't want to be chastened. I don't. You don't. But it's necessary. But nevertheless, afterward, after we've borne it, it yields, it produces the peaceable fruit of righteousness to them which are exercised by it. We know that. We are to walk with him and not allow sin to have dominion over our lives. Now we know where Israel's headed. If you have any familiarity with the scriptures, you know where they're headed. but do we know where we're headed? Have we learned from their example? Or are we going to do as Israel did and fail of the grace of God? There is no better life than a life of faithfulness. No more blessed of a life. There's not a more joyful existence on the face of the earth than walking with God. Trust Him. Live for Him. Day by day. Don't stop. Suffer the chastening when it comes for sin. Don't despise it. Get back in. Make a confession of sins. Be restored to the joy of the Lord. That's kind of the idea here. She was brought back in, and they started off on their sojourn again. Thank you for your attention.